They want me to get rid of my dog. Can they do that?
I'm being fined for leaving my garage door open too long.
What are covenants? Do I have any rights?
Help, I feel like I've left the American zone.
If you want the answers to those questions, join me, Sue Bartholomew, and my guests on The Commons every Saturday from 2 to 3 right here on WBR Fairfax Radio. We'll ask the experts and we'll untangle the truth about what's left of our property rights.
On the Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory membership homeowners associations. Join us as we explore this relatively new world of controlled living, which includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single-family homes. Living in a common ownership development means giving up the American dream. It means giving up your constitutional rights and control over your most valuable asset, your home. Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone. This is On the Commons, and I am Sue Bartholomew. Joining me on the Commons today is Debbie Goonan, all the way from cold and wet Pennsylvania.
Yeah, Lewisburg.
Lewisburg, Pennsylvania, where everything happens. Amazing, yeah. Isn't it? Debbie, thanks so much for joining us. You are I don't know what the word is that I'm looking for, but you are an incredible blogger. You put out stuff once, twice, three times a day. And I'm always in awe of all the work you do. So thank you for that.
Sue, thanks for the kind words and thanks for having me on again. I always enjoy talking to you and listening to your weekly podcast.
It's good to hear from people who know what's going on. Although you are lucky enough not to live in an HOA anymore, you're one of the ones who got out.
Yes, I've made my escape.
I love it. Tell us what your blog is. How can people get it? Although it seems like half the world is on your blog anyway.
Well, the name of the blog is Independent American Communities, and you can reach it by going to independentamericancommunities.com. And once you get there, it's very easy to subscribe by email. You just press a button and put in a little bit of information, and you can subscribe by email. But I share my posts to my social media accounts on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. And occasionally I share some information on Reddit. So you'll, be able to find me in a number of different ways, or just do a Google search on Deborah Goonan, D-E-B-O-R-A-H Goonan. And, you'll find it, independentamericancommunities.com. The tagline that I have on my website is Exposing Residential Real Estate Corruption and Educating Consumers in Search of the American Dream. And my favorite hashtag that I use on Twitter is Value My Rights, because that's what it all comes down to. When you live in many of these planned communities, In some ways, you're compromising your rights by agreeing to live by certain rules, kind of by default, just by buying the house or the condo. So.
But I think part of the problem is that even if you sat down and you went through the declaration and all the governing documents and the mountains of paperwork you're supposed to be given.
Right.
You're not agreeing to anything because you don't know what rules they're going to come up with. And they can amend the documents, they can change everything. So even though you think, all right, here we go, they can change it all.
It can be changed either by the a supermajority of
maybe
ownership interests, or if the developer is still in charge of the community, the documents can be amended by the developer without any real input from members.
And the board can promulgate rules and regulations.
Right.
Whether or not they have the authority to do that is immaterial, because quite often they come up with a rule.
Mm-hmm.
Or what they will do, and I've seen this happen a million times, is amend the bylaws and treat
right.
the bylaws as a declaration, because they're easier to amend. So they'll go in and put in restrictive covenants in the bylaws, and they'll say, here
right.
we go, it was properly amended. Fact is, it's a mess. The fact is, there's no adult supervision anywhere. The fact is that any yahoo out there can either get on the board or get hired by the board and come
right.
up with all these stupid things. So, you can't know what you're getting into. I mean, that's the whole lie.
Well, and even if you read the documents, first of all, there's no guarantee that you're going to be given a complete and correct set of documents before the close of sale. That's number one. And then even if you were to read them, in a lot of cases, they're so vague and they can be very complex and sometimes contradictory that you may have one understanding of what you're reading, but when push comes to shove, your understanding is incorrect, because you could give those documents to, three different attorneys, and you might get three different interpretations of what a particular rule or policy means.
Well, they're intentionally vague, and even attorneys
right.
who have bought and come to me because they've had problems have read every word, because they are
mm-hmm.
attorneys and because that's what attorneys do.
Right.
And, the way the courts have interpreted it, the way the HOA attorney has interpreted it, it's got nothing to do with legal language. It's like, oh, no, that's not what we meant. What we meant was, I'm sorry, I don't care what you meant. If you meant it, then put it down. And if you can't put it down, then you can dream that you meant it. But the fact is, people need to know what they're getting into, and they don't.
They don't. And then that's one of the reasons why I began writing the blog. Each one of my posts provides, one or two key points or tidbits of information or knowledge, documented and with examples, so that people can hopefully understand the concept that they're reading about. It's not abstract, abstract ideas. And I try to use examples that real people can relate to in plain language that people who aren't attorneys or, accountants or whatever can actually understand.
But why does it have to be so damn complicated? Why does it have to be? Why does living in your home have to be so complicated?
I mean, everything is complicated now, from whatever color you want to paint your house to what kind of decorations you want to put there. If you want to make a modification to your house, if you want to hang curtains or blinds, it's just gotten to the point where, you almost have to ask your association, Mother, may I? Remember that game as a child? Mother, may I take two
yeah.
steps?
Yeah.
It's kind of like that, which is why I, one of my blogs that I wrote, it's called It's Time to Deregulate Homeowners and Restore Private Property Rights, for that reason, because you hear the industry say all the time, well, we don't want the government regulating homeowners or associations. Well, what's more, a homeowners association or a condominium or cooperative association heavily regulates its owners and residents. Nothing is more heavily regulated than the homeowner or resident of one of these associations.
They get into they get into the most private and personal areas of your life.
Well, you can't have certain home based business, and you can't park certain kind of vehicles in your driveway, and if your kids want to have toys in view in the front yard, that's not allowed. Or maybe you want to plant vegetables or a certain kind of native plant, and that might not fly with the rules and regulations. I mean, really, the amount of regulation is crazy, and those regulations and rules change depending on who's on the board. Rental restrictions change, and you name it. The right of first right of refusal on a resale, like when you're talking about condominiums. There's just so many things. It's even to the point where if you want to go and sell your property, your real estate agent can't just put any old kind of sign out in the front yard. It's got to be like a certain approved sign that looks uniform, that's approved by the association. That's how crazy it's gotten. And even some of the real estate agents are kind of annoyed about that.
When I was in real estate years and years and years ago, millions of years ago, they liked HOAs because they kept the place neat. So when they had a listing and people brought potential clients, they didn't find all the junk all over the, or that was their argument. Mm-hmm. But the fact is that they sell these houses to people who buy them because they mm-hmm. absolutely fell in love with the deck or the shrub or the roses.
Right.
Or the view or something. And the minute
the promise of maintenance-free, carefree living, lock-and-go condominium
view. But the thing is, if you buy mm-hmm. this particular house because it's got this particular feature, and then you move in, and then you get a violation notice from the association to say, wait a minute, you did not get permission for that deck, remove it. Take mm-hmm. it down. And they go, but I didn't mm-hmm. put the deck in. It was there when I bought it. That's mm-hmm. okay. We don't care. We want to take it down. Now you've put all your money into a down payment, into costs, mm-hmm. into moving costs and all of that. Now you've got to take down the one feature that made that house unique and different from all the others.
Right.
And some of the rules, I've had, this show's 18 years old in a couple mm-hmm. more months. So, I've talked to a lot of people, and I remember talking to someone, an attorney in New York City, who mm-hmm. said that his client was a medical student, lived at home, and one of the rules was you could not sit on the floor. So somebody came in. No, seriously. Somebody came in to do spray for maintenance, and she's sitting on the floor. She's got her books on the floor around her, and she's studying. She's going to be a doctor, and we cannot have that. So she was fined and told off because she was breaking a rule. How stupid is that?
Sitting on the floor in the lobby, in the common area?
No. In her unit, quietly. Sitting on the floor studying.
How would they even know?
Because somebody came in, because it was a condo, and they came in to disinfect or whatever they do. And, of course, in condos and co-ops, people can just walk in to your place. And so they walked in, and she was sitting on the floor with all her medical books around her, and she was cramming for an exam. And she was fined and told off because she was violating a rule.
That one takes the cake.
Well, there's another one. Same attorney who told me that story told me about another. And you remember these because they stand out. about an author. And he wrote from home.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody noticed that he was always home.
Mm-hmm.
So what's he doing to make money? Well, then they discovered he was writing books.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, oh, you're running a business in your home. You've got to go get an office.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So he had to go and rent office space because he was violating the rule. Now, yeah. Not running a business in your home is, they don't want a lot of people there. They don't want a lot of cars there. They don't want to disrupt the neighbors. Sitting down quietly and writing a book is not running a business from your home. I mean, it just boggles the mind that these people
yeah.
will take this stuff into such extremes.
Yes.
And the courts uphold them. I mean, that's the idiocy of the whole thing. That's
right.
Absolute lunacy of the entire system. The courts go, oh, yeah, it's definitely a rule, and you violated the rule. Oh, you are a bad boy. So,
but and somehow it's amazing to me that the courts have not looked at some of the rules, I mean, and restrictions, and said that the restrictions themselves are unreasonable or unconscionable or even unconstitutional.
You know, they used to do that before we ended up with all these stupid disclosure laws. I thought it
right.
was great. And Fred Goldbecker said, no, they're not great. You don't want these disclosure laws. I said, if people knew what they were getting into, they wouldn't buy into these idiotic
mm-hmm.
plans. And he said, sure, you don't want them. What happened was it reinforced the association's legal position, because you were given the governing documents, therefore you had to agree. There wasn't this, well, you should have gone to the courthouse and done your due diligence. There was none of
right.
that anymore. It was, you were actually given the rules and you did not follow the rules. So it put the homeowner in a worse position than they were in before.
What if one of the rules, you know, to use like something that your mother or grandmother would have said, what if one of the rules was that on Fridays you have to go jump off a bridge? You know, I mean, it's almost that ridiculous.
Well, you agreed, didn't you, Debbie?
You agreed to jump off the bridge on Friday. You know, it's just, it's just so ludicrous that, I mean, obviously you can't have anything in a deed restriction that says that you cannot sell to a person of color or somebody who's Jewish, right? That there's laws against that. That's unconstitutional.
But that's how these things started. You know, when HOAs first started, it was exactly for that reason. It
yeah.
was to keep the neighborhoods more homogenous.
Right.
And then the courts came in and the Fed said, oop, we can't have that. It's discriminatory. And so they did away with it, but they allow the rest of the crap to sit around.
Right. Right. So, I say, it's discrimination by CC&Rs.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's basically what it is. You know, they
absolutely.
Just made up other rules with the same intended effect, but technically they're not discriminating against any protected class. They're just saying, well, you're not following a particular rule,
yeah.
however inane the rule is.
Any idiot who can come up with any stupid rule, like you may not sit on the floor in your own apartment. I mean, who would think of something like that?
I don't know. That's the first for me. That one I've not heard of. But
who would think of that? I mean, what kind of an idiot would come up with something like that? It just boggles the mind. Yet that's what's happening.
Yeah.
That's what's happening. Anyway, you are putting out at least one. I swear it's more than one that comes pinging into my email account. Blog a day.
Mm-hmm.
And you have picked three of them that you sent me
mm-hmm.
that we're going to talk about. One of them,
okay.
The first one we're going to do is Lamplight Village, where, so tell us about it, Debbie.
Well, Lamplight Village is a townhouse Association, located in Las Vegas, Nevada, in a larger master plan community called Centennial Springs. And Lamplight Village has, you know, about roughly 200 or so townhouses. They're maybe, you know, they're less than 20 years old. And other than the townhouses, they have as common area, like a small playground area where they had like a basketball court and a swing set and some other things for kids to do. Well, in 2013, a 15-year-old young man by the name of, his last name was Thompson, Carl Thompson, was playing basketball, and he sat down to take a break from playing basketball on a nearby swing set. When he sat down on the swing, he wasn't actually even swinging on the swing, but when he sat down on the swing set, the metal bar at the top of the swing set came loose, fell, and hit him on the head. And unfortunately, he sustained a brain injury that caused permanent brain damage. He did survive, but he has these complications that will last him the rest of his life. And so the association, subsequently, the manufacturer of the swing set and the association were sued by Carl Thompson and his parents at the time. And the lawsuit stretched out for, you know, for almost 5 years.
Wow.
And during the time that they were doing discovery for this lawsuit, I found out from, you know, various reports that I've read, they found out that the swing set had a history of problems. It had a history of breakdowns before. So the manufacturer of the swing set, the manufacturer is located in Pennsylvania, I guess the swing set was repaired by welding it at the top a few times, and then at one point it was even replaced, and then there was a new warranty, and but they still had problems with it breaking down. So the manufacturer offered to have a maintenance plan that somebody from the manufacturer would come out regularly, inspect the equipment, and do any maintenance necessary or replacements of parts, whatever would be necessary to keep it safe. And that would have cost the association $150 a month. Well, the association decided, somebody on the association board decided they did not want to pay $150 a month to maintain their playground equipment. And nobody else from the association, they didn't have any other contractors that ever inspected the equipment. So they just kind of let it there. Even though it was only a few years old, they said, well, you know, it's only a few years old. What could go wrong? Even though there was a history of problems with this play equipment. And then not long after that occurred, this injury happened. And when the injury occurred, you know, then there was this lawsuit, and there were a couple of attempts made to settle the lawsuit with the association, and the association had a policy with community associations underwriters, which is an insurance carrier based in Newtown, Pennsylvania. But they only had a policy for $2 million. And I guess the attorney for the association's insurance company sat down with the attorney for the plaintiff, and they tried to hammer out a settlement that would, you know, be at $2 million, no more than $2 million. And it's unclear who decided that they weren't going to take that settlement. Whether was it the insurance company, was it the board? But for whatever reason, they didn't settle. the case went to court. It went before a jury, and a jury found in favor of the plaintiff, and they awarded $20 million. $20 million, $10 million in punitive damages. And now the association only has a $2 million policy. So that leaves an $18 million balance. So now all of the homeowners in the association, of course, are, you know, we're concerned. Where are they going to come up with $18 million? And almost as soon as this case came out, it was all over the news, all over the national news, and there was a lot of discussion going on. And, of course, blame started being thrown all around in the association. Well, you know, who was on the board then? Who made the decision not to do the maintenance? And who made the decision not to take the settlement? And back and forth and back and forth. The latest that I found out is that Lamplight Village hired an independent counsel, and they sat down with Carl Thompson's attorney. And this was actually posted on Lamplight Village posted it on a public Facebook page, and it was released to some of the media. And it was decided that Mr. Thompson, this is what it says, Mr. Thompson will take no action to record his judgment or otherwise seek to collect any amounts due under the judgment by collecting from the association, individual units, or their owners. In exchange, the association agreed to initiate action against its insurer carrier, its insurance carrier, and other potentially liable parties. They don't name who those are. For failure to timely settle the case for an amount under its policy limits when Thompson offered to do so. In other words, the association will seek to have the insurance company pay the judgment by assigning its rights to the proceeds from the collateral actions. Notably, regardless of the outcome of the subsequent actions the settlement provides, Mr. Thompson can never seek to collect against the units in the future. Thus, while it appears there is a good case against the insurance carrier, if that proves untrue, Mr. Thompson is nevertheless unable to lien your homes under the executed agreement. In other words, your homes are now safe and will remain so in the future. And this is a letter from the association's attorney, Michael W. McKellab, in Las Vegas. So that's where it stands now, but it, as you notice, there's not a whole lot of detail provided there. Just because Thompson has agreed not to place liens against the association and the units to collect on the settlement, that doesn't mean other parties cannot lien the association. And, of course, there's no guarantee that they're going to recover anything from the insurance carrier, or that the insurance carrier isn't going to turn around and say that there was contributory negligence on the part of the HOA. But of course, all of this stuff is about as transparent as mud right now. You know, the association is not allowing any members of the local media or the press to attend any of their meetings. And they're not releasing a lot of information. So that's where it stands. And the owners are being led to believe that, you know, they can go ahead and sell their houses now with a clear conscience because, you know, this lien isn't really hanging over their heads. Somehow the insurance company is going to pay. What they didn't talk about is since the HOA is now more or less obligated to sue their insurance company, that's going to cost them money. So they're going to have to pay an attorney to basically sue their insurance company. And I assume that the owners will be paying for that.
It sounds like the owners might have dodged a bullet, might have, because as
right.
you point out, nothing is clear.
Right.
But, you know, here's a warning to all American home buyers, housing consumers. Don't buy in an HOA. I mean, this is what you're going to get. The sad part is
that finding something that's not tied up in this kind of mess is next to impossible. You are, in effect, being denied a piece of the so-called American dream. It's an American nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
There's no dream here. I mean, can you imagine this?
Well, it's amazing when people are celebrating the fact that they had that they're out $2 million plus. I mean, really, they're out $2 million plus, right? Yes, they had an insurance policy to cover that $2 million. But who's going to insure this association going forward?
Yeah.
You know, and how much additional cost will there be? Because I don't anticipate, I mean, I'm not an attorney, but I don't anticipate that it's going to end here, because obviously there's going to be ongoing litigation against the insurer, and community associations, underwriters is very intimately tied into Community Associations Institute. So I can imagine there's going to be a very long, drawn out process.
So how many of you,
And there's no telling what the outcome is going to be.
So how many of you out there in the listening audience agreed to this? Is this what you wanted? Because that's what you're going to be told, what you agreed. Like it
you
or
agreed.
Lump it.
And they had no, and the owners, of course, had no inkling that that this lawsuit was going on. They had no control over who was maintaining the equipment and when. And they had no part in the decision, and they even had no idea that this lawsuit was going on until they saw information about the $20 million settlement appearing on social media. That's how the owners found out that there was a lawsuit. They had no idea. No idea.
That doesn't surprise me. That happens, unfortunately, that happens all too often. And the homeowners are just stuck with the bills. And the devalued property, thank you very much. You know, it's because who's going to buy into this, right?
Well, I mean, I would be reluctant to, but, you know, you and I, Shu, we've seen and heard enough from people that we're kind of jaded against these sort of things. But I'm not sure that anybody looking to buy a home right now, you know, given the choice between this community and another one that didn't have this history hanging over its head, you know, where are they going to choose?
But that's the whole problem. And unfortunately, there are some people, some organizations, some groups who make out on these things. One of them is the local municipal government, because they mandate them. And the reason they mandate them is because it's free tax dollars to them. So don't buy into the lies, folks. Please don't buy into the lies. Contact your municipalities and tell them to stop it, to provide you with housing that you want. But then the other one, I mean, obviously CAI's in this all over the place, and they're just cleaning everybody's accounts out there. But there's another blog that you posted about developers.
Oh yeah, political influence of developers.
The political influence of the developers. Want to talk about that?
Yes, I call it the heart of the HOA beast, because there's a lot of folks nationwide that listen to this show, and several of them are involved in trying to get new legislation, better legislation passed at the state level. And a few of them, they see the management industry and the attorneys as enemy number one. And actually, you know, I've been documenting now for a couple of years that home builders and developers are really at the heart of this beast and their relationship with government at the local and federal level. So, you know, like you said, Shu, the developers get their approval to build any kind of new construction from the local government. It involves meetings before the planning commission, and it involves, after the planning commission, it goes to city council or town council or county, depending on where the development is going to take place. And then, you know, there has to be a majority on the council that votes in favor of allowing this development to go forward. And in most cases, you know, there may be occasionally there may be some constituents that are sitting in these meetings that are objecting to a particular kind of development. But more often than not, there aren't too many objectors, and there's people sitting in the in these meetings from the representatives of the developer, and, you know, the attorney for the city or county is there, and the attorney for the developer, and they just make a deal, and they say, okay, well, you know, you can build your houses, and we'll let you build, you know, 10 or 15% more houses if you cluster them and have some open space and give us so much money towards a new school and create an HOA then to manage the common areas. I mean, basically, that's how it works. And then, you know, later on, the developer is the one who, with his attorneys, writes the governing documents. They write all the covenants and restrictions, the bylaws, articles of incorporation, because in most states, you know, these organizations are incorporated. And you can bet that all those documents are written to benefit the developer, because, of course, the developer has a lot of money invested. So in addition to the rules and restrictions, there's advantages written into these documents for developers. For example, in an HOA, a developer during active construction, until most of the homes are sold, carries weighted votes for each unsold home or parcel he or she owns. Now, what does that mean? What are weighted votes? When you buy a home in an HOA, you'll get one vote for each house you own. And a lot of people will go and they'll only buy one home. If you have a neighbor that buys, you know, one home for himself and two homes to rent out to tenants, your neighbor will get three votes in the association. Well, your developer, if he owns, let's say there's 1,000 units approved for the development, and, you know, maybe only 300 of the units have been sold so far. So the developer owns 700 parcels or, you know, unsold homes. And the developer might get anywhere from 3 to 9 votes per parcel. Now, let's do some math, okay? Let's say that the developer gets 3 votes, I'll be conservative, 3 votes per unsold parcel. So if you have 1,000 units, and 300 of them are sold, the most votes that the owners can get on any issue, like, say, amending the governing documents, the most votes they could get if everybody voted would be 300. Of course, not everybody's going to vote, right? The developer gets 700 times 3, 2,100 votes. So that's why I say that during the period of developer control, anything that's written in those CC&Rs or the bylaws or the articles of incorporation can be changed practically unilaterally by the developer. And the owners have nothing to say about it.
That is true. That is absolutely true.
And so sometimes what will happen is, you know, the another thing that will happen is that the developer will promise when he's selling property, okay, well, you know, and there's all these beautiful glossy brochures that will say, well, there's going to be a clubhouse and a pool and, you know, we're going to have an open space or whatever it is. And so people buy into this, especially the early buyers, and they buy into it and they say, oh, you know, we're going to get a park and we're going to have a playground and we're going to have a pool for us to enjoy in the summer. We don't have to maintain it. Isn't that great? Well, something happens and the economy turns and it becomes maybe the developer isn't selling houses as fast as planned, or maybe, you know, market conditions change and the developer decides that it doesn't make financial sense now to go ahead and put this pool in. And even though they were promised this at the time of sale, there's almost always some kind of a disclaimer in the documents or in the sale agreement or both that says that the developer has the right to modify or, you know, not build certain amenities. And the owners can't do anything about it. But, of course, 99% of owners aren't going to read that small fine print when they buy in. And even if the fine print isn't there, their only recourse is to get together and sue the developer. And the chances of taking the developer to court and getting a favorable outcome and getting what they were promised is by no means certain, right? If you have a handful or a couple dozen homeowners going up against a deep pocketed developer, who do you think is going to win that legal battle?
Well, you're absolutely correct. And I think the thing is, what you see is what you get. And if it ain't there, it ain't, you know, don't hold your breath that it'll be there. And again,
exactly.
That's what you need to understand. I remember being invited to meet with a bunch of homeowners, small development south of here. It was just a single street, a cul-de-sac, a dead end. The street was going to be given over to VDOT, and they didn't want to take control of the association until VDOT had signed the paperwork, because they didn't want to get left holding the bag on having to come up with the money to maintain the street. So they called me, would I go down and talk to them? And I said, sure. So I did. Early one morning, Saturday morning, I walked in. There was one homeowner who was away on business. Otherwise, every single homeowner in that development was sitting there at this breakfast place. And the representative from the developer was there. So I sat there and I talked to them and found out what, you know, what their concerns were and what they, you know, what they were talking about. And I looked at their governing documents. And, of course, all of the governing documents tells you how you can sunset or how you can dismantle the association.
Mm-hmm.
The only common thing they had was a drainage ditch. And I said, look, why don't you donate the land and the ditch to the local municipal government? Tell them they can have it with your blessing. They can maintain it.
Mm-hmm.
VDOT will take over the street maintenance, which means you don't really need an association. Now, I'm telling you something. You will never get this many people in the same room, this many owners in the same room again for as long as you guys own these houses. I would suggest that you exercise the option of dismantling the HOA.
Yeah.
You should have seen the look on the developer's representative's face
I literally thought that her jaw hit the floor when it was, whoa, what are you saying, woman?
Yep.
Then you had one person who said, well, what if somebody painted their door red? I said, somebody painted their door red.
Mm-hmm. So what?
Where's the problem? Are you afraid of red doors? Oh, no. I don't think they ever did dismantle the HOA, but they had the perfect opportunity to do it there.
Right.
The guy who was away could have come back and not had to worry about any of this stuff. It's gone.
Yeah, because the hook that creates these HOAs, other than the, you know, the CC&Rs and the rules and all those standards, the real hook is the common property, because that is sort of like the anchor that keeps these things in place, because it can be difficult for the association to dispose of certain common property and their obligations to maintain it. Because why? Nobody wants to take it. You know, sometimes you can't convince, sometimes you cannot convince the county or, the local government to take it, or, and if that's the case, then you can be stuck with it.
Well, it depends, Debbie. It depends.
Mm-hmm.
I got a call from someone in Maryland some years ago, mm-hmm. and they had all got together and they did not want the association. They wanted to do away with the association. So again, in the beginning, it was you had to have common property in order to have an association. Why have an association if you didn't have common property? Well, now it doesn't matter. So I said, well, do you have common property? Yes, we have this huge field. I said, well, it's going to be kind of hard to do that, get rid of that. And they said, oh, no, because the field that they had was all in one contiguous area. And there was a church on the other side of that. The church wanted the land.
Yay.
And
yeah,
so you had, you could donate the land, the property, to another not-for-profit organization, and they had someone. I don't know. He wanted to know what I thought. I said, go for it. Why would you want to pay to maintain that field? I mean, it's still going to be there.
Right.
You can still use it, presumably. A church is not going to kick you out, but if they want it, give it to them.
The fear that they usually try to put into owners when they're trying to prevent them from dismantling the common property is, oh, well, then, that person, we don't know what they're going to do with that piece of land. You know, they might put a cattle ranch on it. They come up with just the most ridiculous things. Or, they might decide that they're going to build apartments there
Chances are.
Yeah.
That there's a covenant on that land that says it can never be built on because it's going to be part of their open space.
Yeah.
So there's a master plan, at least in Fairfax County in Virginia, there's a master plan. And every bit of land is spoken for. And if you have open space, because 20% or whatever the thing happens to be at the time has got to be open space permanently. So if somebody else wants the property, give it to them.
Absolutely give it to them.
They can't build on it because it's part of your open space.
Well, that's if there's a restriction on there that isn't able to be overturned. What about all the golf course communities? Because I'm following them now, too, golf course communities all over the country. And a lot of times the golf course community and the surrounding HOA will have information written into their restrictions that says, the land will – it may not say that the land will always be a golf course, that it has to be open space or recreation. Yet there's still what's happening is that – developers are going, they're selling the land to some, to a, you know, a third party, and then they're going to the local municipality and saying, or the county, and saying, you know, we can't make a go of the golf business. It's not making any money, and we have this land, and we'd like to redevelop it. Or they say, well, you know, there's 18 holes of golf here, and if you would let me use half the land to build 100 townhouses, I can use, I can keep the other half a 9-hole golf course.
Okay.
I mean, these are the kinds of things that are going on. And some of them, you know, they're going to court and they're going through the motions. But in some cases, these changes are being made despite what was originally written in the documents. And in some cases, there might be restrictions on there, but the restriction for open space only lasts for, you know, 30 years or 50 years or 25 years, and that expires. And then at that point, you know, all bets are off. Anybody can use the land for something else. They'll still have to go and get it rezoned. And, you know, they'll have to hash out with the neighboring owners what eventually happens to the land. But across the country, golf courses are becoming something else. They're either getting smaller, they're going away, they're becoming drainage fields, you know, they're being redeveloped as townhouses. Communities or single-family home communities with HOAs, you name it. I've seen all different variations on the theme. And in some cases, you have a situation where the HOA or the neighboring community decides that they're so worried about what will happen to that land and or they want to keep it a golf course, so they take a vote. And a majority of them say, well, okay, we'll pay extra assessments or we'll establish a special district or something, and we'll take ownership and maintenance of this golf course. And then they bind all of their neighbors, whether they want to do it or not. The majority binds the minority into paying for maintaining this golf course and this land, you know, for the foreseeable future.
When I first came to Virginia, and I talked to my supervisor, my county supervisor. Mm-hmm. She complained because she said that the developers owned the county. And I did not understand what she was telling me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I now know, because when it comes right down to it, it's the developers who own the people who you voted for, I voted for, allegedly to represent our interests, but they are a wholly owned subsidiary of whatever development comes along. So if a developer mm-hmm. comes in and says, you know what, I want to change that, they've got enough money to buy and sell these little legislators. You know,
and they own a lot of land. That's part of it, too. They own a lot of land, a lot of taxable assets. And they almost always will threaten a lawsuit.
No, they don't. They don't have to, because the county just gives them. They just roll over. You go, oh, Mr. Developer, would you like to do that? Yes, as long as you put in an HOA. So we'd not a problem. We'll put in an HOA so you collect mm-hmm. all that free tax dollars. So, yeah, I mean, you know, you and I are being bought and sold.
Right.
You know, we're nothing right. more than pawns in this game. And as you said, it is a political. It's the political.
And it goes all the way up to it goes all the way up to the federal level, too.
Oh, I know.
Because I looked into, for example, there's an organization called the National Association of Home Builders.
Yeah.
And most of their members are small developers. They're not the big developers from Urban Land Institute. We're not talking, you know, Del Webb and, you know, Toll Brothers and all of those, you know, D.R. Horton. We're talking smaller development companies and construction companies that do a lot of the grunt work, and they do a lot of smaller communities, but all across the country. And they have a pretty influential lobby.
Yeah, they do.
And in fact, I was checking out, like every year they have a campaign that they call, where they basically meet with their Congress people and their senators in their home states. Okay. So this year they met with, I have a list here.
We're out of time, Debbie.
Okay. Yeah, but they met with both, you know, representatives of both parties.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, they buy them.
So,
they pool their money, and even though they're small, they've got the influence. We still had more to talk about, so you're going to have to come back and do it. But we are
okay.
out of time. Thank you so much for coming on, Debbie. Always love having you.
Oh, thanks.
Always enjoy you.
Thanks a lot, Shu. Enjoy talking to you, too.
Please check out our website at onthecommons.us. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to justice for HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.